Hi, this is Tom Wells from Duanesburg, and you're listening to WSDE AM 1190. We're at your service and on your side.
Welcome back to the Catherine Zox Show. I'm Catherine Zox on WSDE AM 1190, Cobleskill, at your service and on your side. As you know, we are on the net. So log on to the net at WSDE1190.com and listen to us on the net. And listen to my next guest, Neva Soloway. She's the author of the book Chasing Dreamtime, a wonderful book, and calling us and all the way from California. Welcome to the show, Neva.
Hi, Catherine. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm very excited to be here today.
Great to be on the show. I love having authors and talking about your book and the motivation for writing the book. And you are very well. Let's talk about Chasing Dreamtime. This is an experience that happened to you quite a while ago, right? Before you were 25 years old, and you decided to write about it.
Correct. It was in the 1970s, and I took off after college in a brief marriage that didn't go very well.
Yes, it happened to all of us, I want to say, but yeah, go on.
It's a more common story these days.
Yes, it's true, unfortunately, but...
And I guess I was maybe more desperate than most, but I took off and landed in Hawaii, and I decided I just would buy a boat and sail around the world. And it didn't quite work out that way. My little boat just wasn't up to the task. And I ended up selling that and then hitchhiking through the South Pacific on different types of sailing boats.
And you had all kinds of adventures, and this is what you write about in the book. And I don't like to be a giveaway for the whole book, by the way, but the name of the title of the book is Chasing Dreamtime, but it is your whole experience. Tell us, first of all, I mean, you were very brave to be able to do this. I mean, you know.
Well, that's interesting. A lot of people look at me and say, we're not sure if you're brave or just foolhardy.
Yeah. Or because you were in your 20s and, you know, it's a journey, and why not do it? And you have a different attitude then, or most of us did, than we do now anyway.
Yeah, I was definitely excited about all the adventures, but each one seemed to lead into some dark water sometimes. Sometimes they turned out okay and sometimes not so well. But essentially, once I started moving, I just couldn't resist going to the next spot or the next island and just experiencing life as it came.
So. All right, so you started out in Hawaii, and you were going to do your own boat, but obviously that didn't work out.
Yeah.
So what happened next? I mean, how did you just sort of begin this journey? And
Well, I think page one starts with myself in jail in Tahiti, which...
which is not a good thing.
Yeah. And I didn't write that in my letters home, so that was part of the reasoning for... Writing the book was to get the story straight, but I started out being arrested for a visa violation, and unbeknownst to me, a British skipper came in and virtually rescued me from going to jail. He spoke French fluently, and from that point on, I was bonded to the boat, which meant I couldn't leave the boat until I was out of the Society Islands. So that's how that part of the journey began.
Yeah, so you were sort of forced into doing that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, why did he decide to save you? Why, you know, what was the relationship between the two of you? Or where did he, you know, what motivated him to save you from your visa violation?
Yes, I didn't know the skipper at the time, but I had met the character in the book, William, just along the waterfront and along the boats. I hadn't been there long, but the sailors tend to gravitate towards the yachts and hanging around. And so I'd met William, who was a crew on the boat, and he relayed the message to the skipper, you know, that I was in the clink, so to speak, and he urged him to come rescue me. So
there you are, this young, energetic, attractive young woman about to be incarcerated for life because of a visa violation.
Right.
So let's rescue her, and then what happens? Where do you go? What's the journey?
So off we go, and unfortunately, the single female on the boat wasn't as excited about my being on the boat as I was.
Yeah.
So we had two guys and ended up two girls, including myself. So off we go to the Society Islands, which is the beautiful islands, Bora Bora, and, you know, just glorious, glorious spots. And unfortunately, our relationships weren't quite as beautiful as the islands.
Yeah, which they never are. And then, of course, when you're in a confined area, I mean, everything comes out, all the emotional repartee.
It really does. Yeah. It really exaggerates every small idiosyncrasy you might possibly have.
Because you can't get away.
Exactly. Yeah. You start despising the way someone brushes their teeth. Yeah. You know, it's completely irrational.
Yeah. Or even has a little cough or a smile or a laugh could drive you insane, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Or even the sounds on the boat sometimes. You know, the weather might get very quiet, and just a wave continually bumping the side of the boat can really get on your nerves and get you jangled. So that happened a lot, but we did sail on, and we went to the Cook Islands, again, another gorgeous, gorgeous area with low atolls, which you really can't see. They aren't, you know, grandiose hills and mountains like Bora Bora, but very low-lying islands scattered throughout the South Pacific. So we went from island to island, and each one presented its own sort of dramatic experience, yeah.
Yeah, there was a challenge in each one of the places that you ended up being in that you had to overcome. And
yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it, yeah. I hadn't really framed it in my mind like that, but yes, that's true. The first island, I was extremely ill. I came down with some fevers, and we were brought ashore, and kind of a long story behind that, but I was taken ashore and put in this little makeshift hut, where I kind of went through these series of delirious fevers for several days while the rest of the crew ran around and seemed to have a pretty good time without me.
They didn't care. Every man for himself or every woman for himself or herself.
That's right.
But were you frightened? You know, that's my question, because I have lived in a third world. I lived in Colombia for 6 months when I was just the age that you're talking about and haven't written about it, but similar experiences. And one of the things, getting sick in those kinds of situations can be really scary because you realize there's sort of no recourse. You know, you're not going to be taken to the nearest, major medical center if something goes wrong.
Exactly, exactly. And in retrospect, it was probably more frightening because at the moment I really was completely delirious and really unaware of, I think for three or four days, I was completely unaware. I had fever, the skipper said, of 104 to 105. And he was worried. He was the one that carried the brunt of the worry at that point.
Yeah.
But I was really quite out of it. And by the time I was becoming conscious again, I was so grateful for the smallest things like a drink of water or a cracker that, you know, it seemed wonderful. It seemed heavenly.
You know, what a journey. You wound up in Australia at the end. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, after many adventures, I did end up sailing to Australia and arrived, and I really felt like I'd had enough of sailing. You know, I just thought, I'm just never doing any of that again. So I just wanted to, in my mind, I just wanted to go to a nice little town and just rest, relax, get an easy job to survive, and that would be, you know, that was my idea. And I got a bicycle, an old secondhand bike, and just decided I would ride along the coastline, thinking it was maybe like California, where you'd ride to a little seaside town, and then there'd be the next one.
Simple,
and another 10 miles.
Yeah.
And that was my experience, so I assumed that's the way it would be. So off I went, and soon enough, I realized that not only were there no little towns or rest stops or gas stations or 7-Elevens, there was nothing once you left the main city of Brisbane. And I was quite unprepared for all that, but managed to just kind of get by with my water and little chocolate bars for a while, and then went back to, as in the islands, just eating fruit where I'd find it, and I was more aware to buy things when I did finally come across the gas station. So, but it was quite, some of the locations were quite remote, whether it was sleeping in the bush with my little roll up sleeping bag, and or on the beach. You know, it was quite
quite an experience and quite a journey. And you know, and I want to, because we only have about a minute left, but I do want to recommend or tell people where they can get the book, Chasing Dreamtime, because they can order that from Brookview Press, and you can order that on your book online, I assume, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Good old Amazon.
Good old Amazon.com. I recommend reading the book. It's a wonderful journey, and it's described as a seagoing hitchhiker's journey through memory and myth. The author is Neva Soloway, who I've been talking to today, and a gripping parallel journey sailing across the Pacific and through the emotional storms which cloud the writer's past. I like that. That's from the National Geographic Channel. Thanks very much for being on the show, Neva Soloway. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, great to have you. Yeah, take
already.
A look. Yeah, read the book. I read it. It's a wonderful book, and it does take you on the journey. You feel like you're really there, and it is. It has kind of a mythical quality to it. So Neva Soloway, Chasing Dreamtime. You're listening to The Catherine Zock Show on WSDE AM 1190, Cobleskill. We'll be back in a minute.